Welcome back. In this episode, we are going to focus on the development of Henry VIII's foreign policy between 1514 and 1526. We left the last episode with Henry making peace with France through the marriage of his sister Mary to Louis XII of France. Before we get started on the key events of foreign policy in this period, I want to point out some key observations. Firstly, England is still a relatively minor power compared to France and Spain. They are the big players who dominate Europe, not England. This makes foreign policy difficult for Thomas Wolsey, who constantly has to balance Henry VIII's ideas of grandeur with reality. The second observation was that the old alliance between Scotland and France was strong. As a general rule, if England's relationship with France is bad, then it is also bad with Scotland, and it often leads to raids on the border. The final observation is that Henry is broke. He spent his £300,000 inheritance on the early wars, so in this second period, we're going to see a more peaceful policy, but that doesn't mean Henry isn't going to try and go to war. So Henry's sister Mary marries Louis XII of France on the 9th of October, 1514. She was fiercely resistant to the marriage, mostly because Louis was 52, while Mary was just 18. Not an ideal match for her, especially as she was considered the most beautiful woman in England. She could have had anyone she wanted, and she ended up with an overweight and overage king. The marriage doesn't last long. Louis dies on the 1st of January 1515, probably of gout. Henry sends his close friend, Charles Brandon, to bring Mary back to England, so he can marry her off to some other monarch in Europe. Probably not the smartest thing Henry ever did, though. Charles Brandon and Mary had been in love for years before her marriage to Louis. While in France, Charles Brandon and Mary secretly married. When they get back to England, Henry is furious. He fell out with them both for several months and imposed huge fines. Now, this may not seem like a big deal, but it robbed Henry of the ability to marry Mary off to another suitor. Royalty did not get to marry for love. They married for political advantage. Back in France, Louis XII is replaced by his son, Francis I of France. Now, Francis is young, he's ambitious, and he's charismatic. He's every bit as impressive as Henry, and in fact, Henry sees him as a personal rival. Henry had hoped to take advantage of a young and inexperienced king in France by invading again. Remember, being a warrior king drives Henry's foreign policy. He begins talking to Ferdinand of Spain about an invasion, but disaster hits for Henry. Ferdinand dies in 1516 and passes the throne to his grandson, Charles V of Spain. Ferdinand had no living son, and his eldest daughter, who should have taken the throne, had gone mad. This is how Charles ends up there. Charles and Francis quickly make peace with the Treaty of Noyon. It is later extended in 1517 to the Treaty of Cambrai, which included the Holy Roman Emperor. This was not good news for Henry. It sidelined England, and both France and Spain had resources which England could not compete with. Without Spain's support, Henry absolutely could not go to war. Now, Francis is looking to make his own reputation as king. In 1517, he sends the Duke of Albany to Scotland to stir up trouble. Albany was a French nobleman and heir presumptive, meaning that as long as James V had no heirs to the throne, he was next in line. Remember, James V is an infant, so there is plenty of time for him to have an heir. This is why he is known as heir presumptive, because it is presumed that he will be replaced by James's future children. Now, Albany does cause some problems. He exploits the factions in Scotland and is named regent. Scotland at this point is largely split between the Highlands and the Lowlands. And Henry's sister Margaret, who was regent for her son, marries a Lowland nobleman, the Earl of Angus. This infuriates the Highland nobles, and this is why she's replaced as regent. Here we see Henry's policy failing. He had hoped that Margaret could look after England's interests in Scotland, but once she is removed as regent, she holds very little power, and in fact, she leads a really difficult life. Had Henry conquered Scotland, as he should have done after the Battle of Flodden, then this wouldn't have been a problem. But as it stands, there is a Frenchman in charge of Scotland, and the old alliance is strengthening. England was in a dire situation. France could potentially use Scotland as a springboard for war, and England's natural ally, Spain, had made peace with France. Now, I should mention here that there are several treaties throughout Henry's foreign policy which you need to know. Two we've mentioned in this episode: the Treaty of Noyon, and more importantly, the Treaty of Cambrai. There are so many treaties because alliances are broken as quickly as they are made. Whatever suits the king at the time is what the country does. Now back to England. Wolsey recognises England is in a difficult position and looks to rectify it. Wolsey had been steadily rising to power since the French campaign of 1513, and here we see Wolsey's outstanding achievement in foreign policy. In 1518, the Treaty of London was signed. It was prompted by Pope Leo X, who wanted Christian Europe to unite against the Ottoman Turks in the East. It was a treaty of perpetual peace, a non-aggression pact between England, France, Spain, and the Holy Roman Empire, along with several smaller states. Now, clearly, future conflicts broke out, so essentially, it was meaningless. However, at the time, it was seen as hugely successful. Wolsey had united Europe against a common enemy, and all seemed well. Wolsey was made a papal legate for his services, meaning that he was a personal representative of the Pope, a huge honour. This shows you what a success this was seen as. And this was Wolsey at the height of his power. As part of the deal, though, Henry had to hand back Tournai, which he'd won in the early wars. In return, Henry was given back the pension he had lost for invading France. This is bittersweet for Henry. He has to hand back the land he fought hard for, but Tournai had actually been costing the English a fortune. England was rebuilding the castle and improving the city, and it had been a serious drain on money. So while handing it back may have stung, as Henry lost the land in France and the money he'd spent on it, it did mean Tournai wouldn't cost England any more, and he had regained an income. The next plot twist has major ramifications for Europe. Maximilian, the Holy Roman Emperor, dies in 1519 and is replaced by Charles V of Spain. While Ferdinand had been Charles' grandfather on his mother's side, Maximilian was Charles' grandfather on his father's side. This is a really good example of marriages leading to power for royal families. This made Charles V the most powerful man in Europe by a country mile. This almost immediately improves relations between England and France, who try to redress the balance of power. France even agree to withdraw the Duke of Albany from Scotland. Now, this is a major event because it changes the face of Europe. The peace, of course, doesn't last long. Hostilities between the powers of Europe begin to brew again in 1520. Charles V went to visit Henry VIII to try and gain his support for an invasion of France in May 1520. Henry then met Francis in the most extravagant event of the 16th century, the Field of Cloth of Gold. This was essentially a two-week party in June 1520. The meeting took place just outside Calais, which was an English province, but it was on French territory, but still near it, the last English city in France. This made it seem like a neutral location. There was a castle erected solely for the occasion, which was taken down after the 2 weeks. There was entertainment, jousting, feasts, and even a fountain which flowed with wine. The Field of Cloth of Gold is also where the famous wrestling match between Francis and Henry took place. Henry, of course, lost this, which wounded his pride badly. In total, the event cost £15,000 and achieved nothing. When push came to shove, Henry chose to support Charles V over Francis, which is why the Field of Cloth of Gold achieved nothing. Henry chose Charles's side over Francis's for three key reasons. Firstly, choosing Charles's side allowed Henry to improve his relationship with the Pope, who wanted to reduce Francis's control over northern Italy. Remember, Spain and France had been fighting on and off over northern Italy for pretty much all of Henry's reign. The second reason Henry chose Charles's side was because he hoped he would gain more territory in France. Henry still has that ambition to conquer France and to be a warrior king that never goes away. And lastly, it led to a marriage alliance between Charles V and Henry's daughter, Princess Mary. Not to be confused with Henry's sister, who is also called Mary. So from this point on, I will call Henry's daughter Mary Tudor, as this is what most historians refer to her as. England's army invaded France in 1522 and then again in 1523. But things don't go so well for Henry. Charles abandons Henry in the French campaign, leaving Henry pretty much stranded. Charles was more interested in trying to regain Milan from the French than he was in actually trying to invade France itself. Not only did Henry achieve nothing in these invasions, but he also lost the £400,000 a year pension which the French were paying him at the time. Charles V had royally screwed over Henry VIII. Charles has a much more successful time. He was able to deal a decisive blow to the French at the Battle of Pavia in 1525. He gained control of northern Italy. Perhaps even more importantly, Francis was captured at the battle. Charles was in a really strong position. Henry briefly tried to take advantage of this by trying to convince Charles to launch a joint invasion of France. Henry was determined, and he ordered Wolsey to raise funds for an invasion of France. Here we see Henry's idea of grandeur clashing with reality. England did not have the resources to invade, never mind to defeat France. There was also no appetite in the country for another French campaign. The country had seen heavy taxes for the earlier wars in France, and they were in no mood for more. Securing funds proved very difficult. Ever the resourceful man though, Wolsey came up with a plan, albeit a pretty bad one. Wolsey pressed ahead with the amicable grant. This superseded Parliament's role in taxation, and it allowed Wolsey to raise taxes without Parliament's consent. Henry was forced to abandon the idea though, when social unrest broke out. To make matters even worse, Charles V not only refused his offer to attack France, but also annulled the marriage proposal between himself and Mary Tudor. Now he had gotten what he wanted in Italy, he no longer needed Henry. And what's worse for Henry is that reputation that he'd built at the Treaty of London, where he was seen as the great peacemaker of Europe, was now broken. The disaster had three major consequences. The first was that Henry was forced to back down and his ego was damaged. Don't underestimate how important this is. Henry was a proud man and he had been betrayed by someone who he thought was his ally. The second major consequence was it led to Henry resenting Charles. Charles had abandoned Henry, he'd refused to support Henry, and then he snubbed Henry's daughter. And this relationship only got worse with the king's great matter on the horizon. The third major consequence of this disaster was Wolsey was politically damaged. This was Wolsey's first time failing Henry. He had not been able to get Henry the funds he needed to invade France. And he never really recovers from this. And then within 4 years, he's dead. Wolsey wastes no time, though, trying to repair the damage. He pursues a French alliance in retaliation to the poor relationship with Charles, and England signs the Treaty of Moore in 1525. Henry agreed to give up his claim to the French throne in return for a pension. Little side note here, Henry was lying. He had no intention of giving up his claim to the French throne, but it suited him at the time to say it. Henry also supported the League of Cognac, which had been set up by the Pope to counter Charles's influence in northern Italy. As it happens, Henry's support doesn't last long. He refuses to be a part of it when the other countries involved choose Cognac rather than England as the place for the treaty to be signed. That wraps up the events of Henry's foreign policy between 1514 and 1526. What we need to weigh up now is the extent of the reasons for Henry's successes and failure. One of Henry's biggest problems in this period is there is no specific foreign policy strategy. England is reactionary, and this is largely because Henry doesn't have the resources to drive his own foreign policy agenda. And that is solely down to himself. He spent so much money in the early years of his reign that during these years he was unable to influence events across Europe. However, Henry also could not have foreseen the early death of Louis XII, so soon after his marriage to Princess Mary, sister not daughter. He also could not have seen Ferdinand's untimely death. The death of these two monarchs completely changed the face of Europe. The two most powerful men in the world were now young, ambitious, and they had one thing that Henry lacked: resources. Henry was betrayed by Charles in both 1523 and 1525, just as Ferdinand had betrayed him in 1512. But Henry also had some successes. At the Treaty of London in 1518, Henry was genuinely seen as the peacemaker of Europe, and it was a major event. There were even talks at the time of a European crusade to retake Jerusalem from the Muslims. Henry may not have been the driving factor in Europe, but England was the balance of power. Both Charles and Francis courted England's support in 1520, when it became clear hostilities were going to renew. By the end of the period, though, relations between England and the Holy Roman Emperor were poor, and England was leaning towards an alliance with France. Now, this puts Henry about as far away from achieving his overarching foreign policy aims of being a warrior king as he could possibly be, and things were only going to get worse.